This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
It is my pleasure today to welcome a guest to Dreamland who has been on the show a few times. Starting in 1912, Nick Redfern has been on this show 12 times, and this is his 13th appearance. And today I have to welcome him as one of our most popular and frequent Dreamland guests. Nick, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me on again, Whitley.
Well, it's always a pleasure, and for a talk show host, it's always great to know that I have a pro at the other end of the microphone who won't suddenly stop talking.
Hopefully not.
Well, Nick, for those of you who don't know, Nick is the author of a few books, Secret History, Conspiracies from Ancient Aliens to the New World Order, The Complete Guide to History's Rites and Rituals, The Bigfoot Book, The Encyclopedia of Sasquatch, The Monster Book, The Real Men in Black, NASA Conspiracies, Strange Secrets on the Trail of the Saucer Spies. He's been on more than 70 TV shows, including BBC's Out of This World, Sci-Fi Channel's Proof Positive, America's Book of Secrets, Ancient Aliens, UFO Hunters, and The Unexplained Files, and on the National Geographic's Paranatural. Originally from the UK, he has, for reasons of his own, moved to a place with an occasional bit of sunshine, Dallas.
True.
So, Nick was also a good friend of a dear friend of this show and of mine, Jim Mars. And just as we start, I would like to remember Jim very fondly and wish he could be on this show with us right now. All right, Nick, we're going to go through two different books today because Nick turns them out at a prodigious rate of speed, and they're always unputdownable. It's an amazing, amazing output. The first one is about the Slender Man mysteries, and this was written after the violence that took place in relation to this because of generated internet hysteria, and we're going to be very interested, I think, in talking about that. Then later, we're going to talk about a major new book of Nick's, Control, MK Ultra, Chemtrails, and the Conspiracy to Suppress the Masses. Something that we all live with all of our lives, all the time. But before we do that, I want to get into this really bizarre Slender Man story because I thought that your book, rather than being the kind of sensationalism that attached itself to this urban legend, if it was an urban legend, and it might be something a little different, it is not present in your book. It's a very interesting examination of this whole phenomenon. Why don't you start by telling us what it is? In other words, what happens? Where did this word Slender Man even come from?
Well, it all began in the summer of 2009, Whitley, and what happened was that one particular website, a popular website called Something Awful, they created this contest to see who could come up with the creepiest boogeyman-type character for the internet era, kind of like a modern-day Freddy Krueger, but online, so to speak. And a lot of people entered this contest and created their own artwork and Photoshop pictures of, not hoaxing, but, you know, it genuinely was just a contest, piece of entertainment. So a lot of people entered this contest. One of them was a man named Eric Knudsen. And Eric Knudsen is the guy who created the Slender Man by name and its image. And in terms of the image, it looks not unlike a classic Man in Black, black suit, white shirt, skinny black tie, but also this pale face with no eyes, no mouth, no ears, no nose, and this strange tentacles flickering around and coming out of its out of its back. So it looks very weird and strange, and the Slender Man, for whatever reason, we don't know, was the one that everybody kind of gravitated to who took part in this something awful website contest. And literally within weeks of the Slender Man image, if you like, going viral, there were forums and chat rooms set it up in the name of the Slender Man. There was an incredibly popular online fictional show called Marble Hornets, which was sort of like a found footage type movie, like Blair Witch Project, but it was split up into sort of 20 to 30 minute segments and is still watched to massive degrees to this day. And so you had this contest which in a very strange way sort of created this phenomenon of the Slender Man, and people began writing their own fictional stories online. Kindle books came out on the subject, and it really did become sort of a large phenomenon for predominantly kids, teenagers, etc. And from there, nothing really changed for about 4 or 5 months. It was really just sort of an online, issue that so many people were obsessed with. But 4 or 5 months down the line, something very strange started to happen, namely that people claimed they'd seen the Slender Man in the real world, you know, not just in forums, chat rooms, not just in, you know, Google images or anything like that, but literally sort of looming over them in the dead of night. They'd wake up unable to move and see the Slender Man over them. Other people claimed to have seen him lurking in the woods outside of their homes, things like this. And this gave rise to the theory of a subject which deeply interests me, the idea of what are known as thought forms and tulpas, the idea being that so many, literally thousands and thousands of people were obsessing and fixating on the Slender Man, and the theory is that this intense sort of hive mind approach created a thought form, tulpa-style version of the original fictional entity. In other words, what we collectively imagine can take on some sort of form of reality, if you like.
Now, this is the thing that struck me about the whole phenomenon, is there's no question about the fact that it started in somebody's imagination. Oh, free Dreamlanders, I am going to interrupt myself. I usually interrupt my guest because I can, but I'm going to interrupt myself because it's time for a break. We'll be right back.
Contact in the Desert. This year, the magic happens from June 1 to 3 in a brand new venue in Indian Wells, California. Whitley Strieber will be there telling the joyous story of the afterlife revolution and all that has happened with Anne since the book was published. Then in his second lecture, he's going to be talking about close encounter experiences that are happening to him right now. He reports that there are more of these experiences in his life than ever before. But what are they? What do they mean? He will bring a completely new insight and a completely new vision of this powerful experience. Contact in the Desert features such superstars as George Noory, George Tsoukalos, Linda Moulton Howe, Freddie Silva, Nick Pope, James Gilliland, Peter Lavenda, Travis Walton, and many more. Don't miss this incredible weekend of enlightenment and discovery. Go to contactinthedesert.com and sign up today. Ever wonder what the close encounter experience is all about? Think you know what it's about? When you open Whitley and Ann Strieber's Immortal Communion Letters, you're going to experience a whole new vision, not something being told to us by researchers and theorists, but the actual testimony of people who came face to face with this unknown. Unforgettable. And the book is only $3.99 at Strieber.com.
We're talking to Nick Redfern, his new books, Who is the Slender Man? And Control, MK Ultra, Chemtrails, and the Conspiracy to Suppress the Masses. Now, there's no question about the fact that the Slender Man came out of somebody's imagination. We know his name. It's not a question. But what happened then in the world of other people's minds is what your book is really about. And I find it absolutely fascinating because it quickly came to a kind of shadow line between real and unreal. Can you describe that to us a little bit?
Well, yeah. I mean, there's no doubt, really, that since the Slender Man phenomenon began, very, very quickly, the lines between fantasy, reality, truth, and fiction became extremely blurred. And in some cases, they were blurred in very dangerous ways. Now, so on the one side of the coin, you have people who say, well, this is just people who, you know, descended into states, psychological states, and could not make a determination, if you like, between reality and fiction. Other researchers have suggested that a paranormal aspect is responsible for the mania and for making it even bigger, if you like, by this angle of so many people thinking about the Slender Man, and in a very strange way, it kind of gives birth to a real version, if you like, a real world version. Those are sort of the two angles that are sort of most popular of all, and it could be a crossover of both. But the one thing we can say for sure, though, is that unlike any other fictional creation, going back to things like Freddy Krueger and like Michael Myers from the Halloween movies, things like that, what we're seeing with the Slender Man is something we haven't seen before. And regardless of whether it's paranormal or psychological, the fact is that when people get involved in the Slender Man mystery, on so many occasions, it creates paranoia, obsession, danger, even murder. And there really isn't any other fictional entity that allegedly has been sort of brought into the real world that has that effect on people in the way that the Slender Man does.
Now, I want to talk about tulpas. You mentioned tulpas in the book. And the reason I want to talk about tulpas is that there's something going on here, as you've just pointed out, that is not usual. In other words, this didn't stay in the sort of horror story space. It moved out into a kind of half-life, a sort of strange reality that ended up turning people violent and getting some kids into real serious trouble. Tell us a little bit about what a tulpa is.
Well, essentially, the word tulpa is a Buddhist term, and the closest translation in English is thought form. And the scenario is that if one person or a group of people try and focus their mind on, even a fictional entity, and you visualize it, you perhaps even get your mind into sort of an altered state, and for days, for weeks, possibly months, you visualize this particular entity, this particular character, and you have a group of people almost in like a hive mind scenario. And by fixating and focusing on this particular entity, it's possible to sort of externalize the image in the mind and project it outwards to the point where so many people start to believe in it, and it becomes more and more physical and corporeal to the point where it eventually becomes self-aware and breaks free of the creator. So in other words, it's almost like a, in a very strange way, sort of a supernatural way of giving birth, rather than in the tried and tested way of that's gone on for millions of years. But what's particularly intriguing is that in so many of these cases, what happens is that the thought form breaks free of the creator and turns the tables because it doesn't want to be deconstructed. And one of the attendant theories or concepts is that it's possible to deconstruct these creatures by visualizing them literally being deconstructed, or by trying not to think about them. And, of course, that's a very difficult thing to do. If you put something in someone's mind, it's hard for them to forget about it if you're telling them to forget about it, because it stays on their mind. And just as a little aside, to a small degree, I think the whole angle of the thought form tulpa sounds, and how they can be destructed and how they can be held at bay by not thinking about them, kind of sounds a little bit like the story given to you by your your uncle in the military about how, you know, these entities could be held at bay by, in essence, denying their reality, you know.
Yeah, well, the idea there was from one of the scientists that was involved. I believe it was Dr. John von Neumann. It wasn't my uncle. It was General Arthur Exon who brought this subject up. Just listeners, to refresh your memories, he said that one of the scientists had written a short memo saying that if we let the secret out, if the government let the secret out, and we're going to be talking about that in this next section of the show, just a few minutes, we're going to start on control, MK Ultra, chemtrails, so forth. In any case, if the government let the secret out, it would be like a tripwire, and once everyone believed it, it would be like a door that opened into a door into our world that we could never close again because the door is in our minds. So that's sort of related here. It's interesting you bring that up. How do you think it relates, if I may ask?
Well, I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, but one of the things that I do think is going on with the UFO phenomenon is that, you know, there are a number of cases where I think it kind of suggests that the phenomenon can interact with us in the dream state. You know, it's not all just sort of the physical world, so to speak, you know, nuts and bolts, UFOs, and it just ends there. It clearly doesn't. You know, I've spoken to a few people who've had abduction experiences, but then have also experienced very vivid dream states where they felt these entities had somehow got into their, literally into their minds or into their dreams and manipulated them for whatever reasons. So, you know, again, I wonder if somehow, you know, they can negotiate realms far beyond ours, which actually touch upon, you know, the world of the imagination, the world of the dream state, which again is sort of ties in with the, you know, how tulpas and thought forms are created from the imagination. So, you know, I think there are certain crossovers, but I mean, in terms of thought forms, you know, there are a number of classic examples of how and under what circumstances they can be created, and in much the same way as a Slender Man. I mean, I'll briefly share one with you. A famous comic book artist from the UK named Alan Moore, and Alan Moore created a lot of well sort of received and now sort of phenomenally successful comic book characters. For example, he created the V for Vendetta character from the movie of the same name, which became the movie of the same name. And also he created the character Constantine, who was played in the movie version by Keanu Reeves, who's sort of like an assassin of demons. Now, what's interesting is that Alan Moore has gone on the record as saying that when he was creating when he was creating the Constantine character, Alan Moore, being a comic book writer, you know, for his readers and viewers, he wanted to get the character just right. So he visualized how Constantine would look with his hair, you know, his height, his face, his clothing, his character, his mannerisms, everything, and spent a lot of time on that. And it may be, and I'm sure it actually isn't, a coincidence that Alan Moore said one particular day at the height of doing all this visualization, he was sitting in a restaurant on the River Thames in London, England, when he saw coming towards him the Constantine image that he was still in the process of creating. And he said this figure was wearing exactly the clothing he had envisaged, you know, back home in doing all the work on to create the character. The hair was the same, the face was the same, everything was the same. And he said this figure or entity, whatever you want to call it, came walking towards him with this kind of sinister conspiratorial grin on its face, not a pleasant grin. And Alan Moore said he just froze. He didn't know what to do. And he said that the character just sort of knowingly walked past him with this eerie grin and nodded and vanished. And so that's just a few years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and cases like this go back centuries demonstrating, you know, what can be done in the name of imagination. And one sort of fictional famous Hollywood version would be in the early 1950s movie, The Forbidden Planet, where you have the Professor Morbius, where when he sleeps, he creates these sort of monstrous entities based on an ancient race of aliens who no longer exist, but he can visualize them in the mind, and he externalizes them on the forbidden planet.
Yeah, and that scene where they reveal it with a flamethrower scared the living daylights out of me when I was a kid. Okay, listen, we're coming up on another break, and after that break, we are moving in a very interesting direction from one type of mind control to another. Or are they really that different? Free Dreamlanders, we'll be right back. The Afterlife Revolution is getting great reviews. There's a tremendous, lovely response to it, and I'm so pleased and humbled because it's an effort on the part of myself and Anne. And I love Anne so much. I want her to succeed in this incredible task that she has undertaken of returning and communicating across the bridge between the worlds. And she's really doing it. This is a real thing that's happening. Listen to some of these reviews. Anne and Whitley Strieber lay out their life's work in the most exquisitely beautiful manner. This moving book comes from the heart, the unified heart of two people who have dedicated their lives in this realm and the next to revealing the nature of consciousness as it makes its sojourn in this human form. That's just one. Here's another. I love this book. It's a wonderful read, especially if you lost somebody very close to you. Just incredible. Here's another one. The book shows you how to grow your soul, for lack of a better term. Through Anne's insight, Whitley shares invaluable information that could only be from the other side. So take it seriously. Go to Amazon and get Afterlife Revolution. Go on to Amazon and get the Afterlife Revolution in paperback or in Kindle format. And if you have questions or thoughts, write me at whitley@strieber.com. I'm right here. I'm ready to answer anything you ask to help you in any way I can, always.
Whitley Strieber's nonfiction is magical, powerful, and thought-provoking. From Communion to the Afterlife Revolution, there is no body of work like it in the world. Nothing even approaches it. And not only that, his wonderful fiction, from The Wolfen to his latest novel, New, offers reading and listening entertainment that you will never forget. And where do you find all this in one place? At Strieber.com. That's where. Every Whitley Strieber book available for sale is there, as well as a pre-order link for New. So don't wait. Go to Strieber.com and start exploring. There's only one Whitley and only one place to find all his work. Strieber.com.
Nick has created a huge new book called Control, MK Ultra, Chemtrails, and the Conspiracy to Suppress the Masses. It's a major effort, Nick. And let me ask you first why you did this.
Because I guess the main reason was because I think the one thing we can all appreciate, well, not appreciate, but understand in today's world is that, you know, there's a growing situation where of surveillance, you know, of questions about, you know, our rights and erosion of civil liberties and things like that. And I think everybody to a degree recognizes it, whichever side of the, you know, the political world they're on. And, you know, there's this sort of legitimate concerns that we're sort of bit by bit going down a cross between, you know, 1984, Brave New World, and some sort of bizarre, you know, frightening dystopian world, you know. And the more you look into it, the more, you know, we're not talking about sort of jackbooted troops, you know, knocking the front doors down. It's in some respect, it's more sinister, more dangerous than that. It's like we're almost unknowingly sliding slowly bit by bit into that world where, you know, a little bit else gets taken away from us, something else gets taken away from us. And then you look back retrospectively 10 years and you think, whoa, look how much has changed. But we aren't recognizing it so much as it's going along. because it's not like, you know, some huge revolution and clamp down. It's just bit by bit. And so, you know, the things I point out, like, for example, the opening chapter, which talks about how things like today's smart TVs are ripe for being hacked into. You know, 10 years ago, we wouldn't have thought about that, really. You know, can you actually have free speech and not have to worry if you're sitting in front of your TV, that, you know, worrying that somebody's into it and, you know, and listening on your every word? That today, that is not paranoia. That can actually be achieved. So, you know, the book kind of looks at things like that as to how this sort of paranoia and fear of being watched, being listened to is really sort of taking place big time.
Yeah, it sure is. It is. We're in a situation in which I think that one of the things that has happened is that communication, the internet in particular, has actually amplified the intensity of the human imagination, which is exactly what happened in the Slender Man case. Now, there is this sense of suppression and deception. Well, like, for example, right now, politically, we have people in places of power in the United States who are basically saying that not only are things like climate change not happening, but that we actually need to do more. We need to pollute more. And, you know, are they really saying we want you to die? Is that what's behind this? And the reason is that this population is unsustainable at this size. Does that mean that they're looking for a kind of a controlled meltdown? Or are they just completely deluded?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, thankfully there are people who recognize, you know, that there are clear changes going on, you know, in the environment, in the atmosphere, you know, in the world itself. I mean, the planet itself. There's no doubt about that. And I think part of it comes down to, well, just let the next generation deal with it and the one after that, because I'll be gone. You know, there's that kind of just selfish, self-serving angle to it. And I think there's also the issue of, you know, sort of fossil fuels being the dominant fuel on the planet. It's certain people sort of look at it as there's no way to change it because the whole, you know, issue is so huge. We cannot change civilization to that degree. But I think also, you know, there is this, there's no doubt, I mean, that you can look at government studies that's where, you know, they've recommended trying to lower the, you know, the human population bit by bit, which in itself, you know, is dark and sinister, or has the potential to become very dark and very sinister. And, you know, when you start talking about surveillance and you combine that with, you know, discussions about lowering population levels and curfews and, you know, implants, tracking devices, you know, and all across the last sort of 10 years, all of these issues have sort of expanded massively as of the controversies surrounding them, you know, and it's almost as if there's this sudden rush to initiate just massive change, you know.
You know, I have friends, I want to get into this Men in Black a little bit now, and this sense of awfulness that is out there. I keep finding, for example, and I'm sorry to sort of jump around like this, but I keep finding on, especially on YouTube, these fake paranormal, very sinister paranormal videos, which make various claims which are not true. And the thing about them that I find so disturbing is they all have the same fake voice, sort of a strangely female voice describing a robotic female voice, and they're all over the place. I just don't understand what it's going on, why people would always want to disguise their voices. It must be some kind of voice disguising program that is being used by many different people. But what is going on that someone wants us to believe in these things? We talked earlier about how Constantine had actually appeared to Alan Moore, how the Slender Man began to manifest as a tulpa after it was imagined by somebody. And now we have a situation where the men in black, I've seen a man in black, or it's a boy in black, actually. And I have lots of friends who have seen it just a few days ago, in fact, that happened to somebody. And what is going on here? Or is there some sort of a meltdown of the human imagination? Are we kind of becoming insane in a way that manifests itself somehow physically?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that there's been sort of a massive change in society over the last 10, 15 years. And a lot of that can be put down to the internet. You know, when you talk about these things on YouTube, I mean, in terms of the technology, you know, and the ability for instant communication, in that sense, the internet is very good. But the problem is when you start to, you know, you have these things on various channels or, you know, various sites. And the problem is that people very often take the view, if it's on the internet, well, it's got to be true. You know, there is a substantial number of percentage of the population that believe that. But of course, you know, when you bring into things like fake news and alternative facts into the equation, then the whole thing becomes very kind of chilling. You add to that, you know, the state of the world and fears of nuclear war and mass shooters. It actually does kind of look like civilization is sort of going on a slow but quickening kind of meltdown, you know. And I mean, you could have sort of, is that just coincidence, or is it something that happens to all, you know, advanced societies at some point? I mean, you know, the Egyptians, the Greeks, the Romans, they all had massive civilizations. None of them lasted for varying reasons. Maybe for, you know, for whatever reason, we're us in this particular civilization form, at least, you know, may not be destined to last. And perhaps it's just something in the human psyche, like a cycle, you know, that things come in cycles, and maybe that includes civilizations. They have a tipping point where things just start to go bad and get worse, you know.
Well, in the second half of the show, we're going to talk about the state of civilization and where it's going and who's pushing it there and what are the techniques and tools that they use. What is the meaning of the age of terror? Free Dreamlanders, thank you so much for being with us. Subscribers, we'll keep on keeping on.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.